Hello, FCS Nation. It's time for your show. I'm your host, Kevin Marshall. I'm coming to you from the mecca of FCS football, Missoula, Montana. Joining me like he does each week, it's the quarterback of the show, former Southern Illinois quarterback, Stone Labanowitz. Stone, awful lot of games to get to from last week and a short time to get there. Let's just dive right into the action from 1 week ago. Up first, number one, South Dakota State 24, Augustana 3. Stone, should Jackrabbit fans be worried?
Jackrabbit fans need to pipe down. There's no reason to be worried. These things happen. I always talk about in big games when a team's favored by 20 plus that the underdogs need to cause a turnover in the first quarter. Something weird needs to happen. And it did on the opening kickoff. They punched the ball out and ended up putting points on the board first. It gives you something to think about when you jog off on the sideline. The Vikings played good ball. South Dakota State didn't play good ball. That's all I got. I think you need these wake-up calls at this stage of the season, and they got it. So they should be happy they got it out of there with the win, and they're moving and grooving.
Like Aaron Rodgers said a couple of years ago, relax, Jackrabbit fans. Your running back, Amar Johnson, ran for a $126 and a touchdown, and I'll bet the Jacks come out a lot more sharp this week in Hammond, Louisiana, Stone, because we're going to be on the sideline, and this will be our second time seeing the Jacks from the sideline. They were pretty sharp the last time we were there, weren't they?
I do want to echo what you just said, though, Kevin. Whoever plays South Dakota State next, and it just so happens to be Southeastern Louisiana, kind of feel bad for them because they're going to take out all of their frustrations that Jimmy's pent up in them in the week of practice.
Number three, Idaho, 41. Others receiving votes, UAlbany, 13. Stone, the much-touted and pointed-to in the preseason quarterfinals rematch from last season's playoffs turned out to be a complete and total domination by the Idaho Vandals.
Kevin, how about this for analysis? The Idaho Vandals are a really good football team. Just a darn good football team. And Eck, known for his offense, has one of the best defenses in the entire FCS. And that's putting it lightly.
And look, they scored in all three phases, Stone. Of course, on offense, on defense, and also in the specialty teams where I think people thought, well, they had a game changer last year at the return position. But they've got one this year who just happens to have a great last name, Andrew Marshall. I mean, the guy's destined for greatness from birth with that last name. And three Vandal running backs combined for 183 yards on the ground. I mean, this is a team, Stone, that really doesn't need Jack Wagner to be the star most weeks. Hand the ball off, play action, play defense, field position. That's how Eck wants to play, and so far, it's so good for the Idaho Vandals. Number four, North Dakota State, 38, East Tennessee State, 35. Stone, you and I could wax poetically and about this ball game, but let's hear what East Tennessee State coach Trey Lamb had to say about it in his post-game comments.
I think there were three miracle plays in that game. You want me to put it very bluntly. Fourth and 10, the guy smoked off his back foot, throws one up, catches it, guy falls down. So that's one. Onside kick hits off our captain's face mask. Not his fault. Bad bounce. I mean, things shaped like this. I don't know why. You know, we get an opportunity for a pick, interception, and then the muff punt. I cannot believe we didn't get off that football. If you just let teams like that hang around, they're going to find a way to win because they've won 9 of the 13 last national championships. And I think that was a big message to the team is if we got opportunities to put games away, we cannot make this habitual. Like, sometimes in year one, it takes you a while to learn how to win. And we cannot make this habitual. And I told the team, when we get this opportunity again, we got to freaking be like a boa constrictor and just squeeze that thing out. So, I don't know. We stole a loss from the jaws of victory is the way I feel right now.
Well, I think that said it all, Stone. Don't you? I mean, wow. He's right. You let a team like that hang around for that long, something bad's going to happen, and it did. But ETSU has nothing to hold their head about. They ran the ball for 270 yards on the North Dakota State Bison, led by Bryson Irby, who had 15 carries, a $147, and three touchdowns, averaging 9.8 yards per carry. We're going to hear more about him a little later in this segment. Bison QB Cam Miller threw for 250 and a touchdown on 21 completions. This was a tough one to lose for the ETSU Buccaneers.
Yeah, we could do the entire segment on this game. There are just so many ways to go. And first of all, shout out to Bryson Irby. He was giving the Bison a taste of their own medicine and just ground and pound, 15 carries, well over the 100-yard mark. Played his behind off, and he gave the Bison everything that they could handle, and they couldn't bring him down. And we were texting throughout this game, Kevin, and you were making sure that I was going to come on the show and have to eat crow about Cam Miller. And I responded immediately and said, I know. Trust me, I know. Because Cam Miller looks great. And where I will defend myself is last year we didn't see a game where he had 33 pass attempts. And I do understand they were playing from behind, so they had to air it out. Regardless, he looked good throwing the ball 33 times, 21 completions. Just a great performance by Cam Miller down the stretch, I'll say. And I don't know, this mathematically makes no sense, and this won't happen again this season, but a team trailing 12 points with under 2.5 minutes to go, I mean, give me a break. The Bison got out of here with a win. I don't know how.
Look, I was present when ETSU did the same thing to Kennesaw State just about. Football is a funny game on that same field, almost the same situation. This time it just didn't go the Bucks' way. Number 7, Central Arkansas, 45, Austin Peay, 17. Stone, this game was tied 3-3 at the end of the first quarter, and I was thinking, all right, Austin Peay shook off what happened to him last week by your Salukis, but then the second quarter happened, and Central Arkansas just put on an offensive clinic on how to run block and run the damn football. Shunderrick Powell and Darius Hale combined for 318 yards and 4 touchdowns. The Bears absolutely whipped Austin Peay up front, Stone. The Bears O-line beat Austin Peay's defense like a red-headed stepchild of a rented mule, and I know that's a couple of sayings together. I just didn't know how else to describe it, brother. They are for real, and anybody who is sleeping on Central Arkansas, you're not paying any attention to that football team, and you should. They are very, very good.
Kevin, in our very first episode this season, I talked about the Central Arkansas team is going to be one of the last four standing, and I feel even more passionate about that statement than I do when I said it. Shunderrick Powell is the best running back in the FCS. I mean, if you push me up against the wall,
I thought about doing several times recently, but go ahead.
Shunderrick Powell may be the best football player in the FCS.
Others receiving votes, Mercer, 10. Number 8, Chattanooga, 3. Stone, when I was watching this ball game, I knew you hated it because this was a good old-fashioned Southern Conference football game featuring two damn good defenses and not a lot of offense, so I know you, like I said, you hated it. Mercer Bears defense, Stone, they held Chattanooga to 19 rushing yards. You heard it right, folks, 19 rushing yards. And the Bears ran it for 184, led by Dwayne McGee with 91 yards. This was the third time in as many games this season that Mercer has held their opponent to 29 or fewer rushing yards. And that defense, Stone, has given up 5 points in their last 9 quarters of football. Yikes. And here are our National Offensive and Defensive Players of the Week, brought to you by Northwestern Mutual. The National Offensive Player of the Week, even though he couldn't win Southern Conference Player of the Week somehow, is Bryson Irby from East Tennessee State. Last week versus NDSU, 15 carries for a career-high 147 yards, 3 touchdowns, 9.8 yards per carry. Congratulations to Bryson Irby, the FCS Nation Radio, Northwestern Mutual, National Offensive Player of the Week. Our National Defensive Player of the Week is Garrett Ollendyke from Indiana State. Last week versus Dayton, all this young man did was have 16 tackles and a 12-yard scoop and score. And Stone, this is not just a one-game effort for him. He leads the Missouri Valley Football Conference so far with 12 tackles a game, and there's some real dudes playing linebacker in the Missouri Valley this season. So congratulations to those young men for being named FCS Nation Radio Offensive and Defensive Players of the Week, sponsored by Northwestern Mutual. Here is the FCS Nation Radio Top 25 for Week 3. Want to thank everyone again for making our Top 25 the most shared and liked of any of them anywhere. Thank you, dear listener and dear followers on social media. We do this for you. Thank you. Number 1, South Dakota State. Number 2, Montana State. Number 3, the Idaho Vandals. Number 4, the North Dakota State Bison. Rounding out the top 5, South Dakota. Number 6 is Central Arkansas, falling to number 7, Villanova. Number 8 is North Dakota. Number 9 is UC Davis. And number 10, the Montana Grizzlies. Number 11, Southern Illinois. Number 12, Sacramento State. Number 13, Tarleton State. Number 14, William & Mary. And entering the poll and rising with the bullet at number 15, the Mercer Bears. Number 16, Illinois State. 17, SEMO. 18, entering our poll for the first time in a long time, maybe ever, is Lamar. Number 19 is Wofford, and rounding out the top 20, Rhode Island. Back in the poll after a one-week absence, number 21, the Western Carolina Catamount. Falling to number 22, the Elon Phoenix. Falling to number 23, Incarnate Word. In our poll for the first time in a couple of years, at number 24, the East Tennessee State Buccaneers. And rounding out the top 25 is the Florida A&M Rattlers. players. It's time for us to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have all the players that are taking part in the Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation Challenge this season, brought to you by Northwestern Mutual. We'll be right back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
Welcome back into FCS Nation. As always, following the review segment, it's the Honorary Captain of the Week. But this week, no Honorary Captain. We have Honorary Captains, plural. It's the player announcement segment where I'm going to go down the list of guys that are joining us in the fight against childhood cancer. Of course, presented by Northwestern Mutual and Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation. If we have any new ears, first-time listeners out there, I tend to give a little bit of context during this segment. The FCS Athlete Challenge last year, Northwestern Mutual created a nationwide challenge where 13 All-Stars from 11 FCS universities competed to raise the most money and awareness for Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation. Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation, now that is a leading childhood cancer research organization that also provides support for local families who need to travel so their kid can get life-saving treatments. In the first year of this challenge, these athletes combined to raise over $45,000, with South Dakota Coyote quarterback Aiden Bauman winning the Lemon Trophy, which was presented to him at the national championship game on site in Frisco, Texas. We had a grand old time having those athletes out there. We had a grand old time in the great state of Texas. The athletes got to experience the scene that is Frisco, Texas, when two teams are competing to win a national championship. Plenty of teams building. It was an honor and a pleasure, to be completely frank with you guys, to build relationships with some of the top athletes and athletes whose parents should be proud, because what they're doing is remarkable. You've never seen it before in the FCS. And this year, the goal is to raise $250,000. Told you earlier, a little over $45,000 was raised last year from FCS fans. I'm challenging you right now. $250,000. We got to get it done. These players are making such an awesome impact and influencing the next generation. For high school athletes that are looking to go to schools, this is something that is going to entice them and ultimately may bring them in to that university and may make them sign that letter of intent to go spend their next 4 years there. I'm excited to announce this year's list to you guys. I talked about it being 12 universities. I'm going to go one by one of these athletes, tell you a little bit about them and what to expect, and of course, how you can donate and help us make a difference when it comes to childhood cancer. First up, Jet Booker. You guys know Jet. Jet is the man. Southeastern Louisiana wide receiver. You heard our interview last week. The kid is brilliant. For those who listened to the interview, it probably took you 10 seconds to realize that this kid, one, has a good head on his shoulders, and two, is very, very smart. So much so that he majors in business admin. And here's the kicker. Here in recognition for his academic achievements, making the Southland Commissioner's Fall Academic Honor Roll in 2021, 2022, and yes, you guessed it, 2023. Jet Booker, Southeastern Louisiana wide receiver, representing the Habits Network office out there in Louisiana and Mississippi. Glad to have Jet on board. Next up, Javonte Graves Billups. Come on down, representing the Citadel Bulldogs. The Big Blue Machine, as Kevin Marshall calls them. Javonte representing the Northwestern Mutual Coastal District office down here in the South. Javonte and the Citadel Bulldogs are off to a 2-1 start, coming off of a season where they didn't win a single game. And a lot of that has to do with Mr. Javonte Graves Billups, redshirt junior, so still got some in the tank. Some cool history on Javonte. He went to St. Paul's, a very popular high school in the United States. They went 15-0, won a state championship, and he was named a finalist for Mr. Football in the state of Alabama. So give it up for Javonte Graves Billups, representing the Citadel Bulldogs and the NM Coastal District office. Next up, Gray Zabel. He's a North Dakota State Bison, representing the Dinger Network office. Big Gray, 6'6", 305 pounds. He's a senior. He rocks the number 70. 2023, started every single game they played. Check this out. He played in 675 reps in the regular season in 2023 with a 90% grade. Gray leads the way on an offensive line that ranked fourth in the FCS last year with 240 yards rushing per game. And they've done very similar things in 2024. Looking forward to meeting Gray. To be honest, I'm not looking forward to meeting Gray because he's 6'6", and I'm barely 5'10", and he's going to tower over me in that picture. In the first picture that we take, I'm going to make sure that I'm on the opposite side of the room. Again, Gray Zabel, North Dakota State, representing the Dinger Network office. Look out for Gray's interview. Can't wait for him to be an Honorary Captain of the Week. All right, next up, Mark Gronowski. Mark, a Walter Payton Award winner, back-to-back national champion. The list goes on and on for Mark. He's the most popular player in all of the FCS. Tune in for Mark's interview. I love chatting with Mark. He's got a great head on his shoulders, a phenomenal family, and he's going to represent the Shankle Network office like no other. Mark, the signal caller for the Jackrabbits. Next up, another quarterback, Aiden Bauman, South Dakota Coyote quarterback, representing the Schenkel Network office. Aiden, just one of the best kids, hands down, on the list. Had a chance to build a relationship with him throughout the years, and he's just in a class of his own. And like Mark, he'll represent the Schenkel Network office like no other. Ben Voigtlander, Eastern Washington, representing the Hansen Network office. Ben has the best head of lettuce on this entire list. I'm so excited to sit down and chat with Ben. Bo Belquest, North Dakota Fighting Hawk, representing the Dinger Network office. My former head coach Nick Hill told me one time, this right here, pay attention, is the best player in the FCS. And he had so many reasons why, and I'm excited to see the other side of him and learn how good of a person he is. Again, Bo representing the Dinger Network office. Shout out North Dakota. Step right up, Central Arkansas linebacker David Walker representing the Meeks Network office. Big senior, three-time All-American last year. Got named to six All-American teams the year before that. He's a UAC Defensive Player of the Year last year. First team All-UAC selection. I mean, this kid's just ridiculous. He was named to numerous preseason All-American teams heading into this season. It's no secret how good of a football player he is, but I'm excited for you guys to get a glimpse and a peek behind the curtain of as to what kind of person David is. Again, David Walker representing the Meeks Network office. Shout out Central Arkansas. Chris Presto, Southern Illinois, stand up, representing the Gross Network office. Chris is a linebacker. He's a sophomore. He's 6'2", 220. He's from my neck of the woods down here in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Attended Cardinal Newman. I was having a chat with my former head coach, Nick Hill, and I was asking him about athletes and how we want to go about this decision process. Who best represents that university and who can best represent an initiative like this? He didn't hesitate. It was Chris Presto. He said if he had a son, he would want him to grow up and be exactly who Chris Presto is. And we got into that. We talked about him for 10, 15 minutes. And you could just hear it in Nick Hill's voice, how he felt about Chris. And I hope that you guys do the same when you get a chance to hear all about him. Chris Presto, again, representing the Gross Network office. He is a Southern Illinois Saluki. Representing Illinois State in the Kramer Network office, that's Daniel Sobkowitz, big wide receiver, 6'3", 205. He ranked in the top 20 in the entire country in touchdowns last year, 10th in receiving yards. This kid gets it done, and he led the Missouri Valley with those 10 touchdown receptions and ranked 3rd in yards per game. That is how you do it in the toughest conference in the FCS. Excited to get to know Daniel. And may I add, I think he's the best looking one on this list this year. Daniel's got it going on. Richmond Spider defensive lineman TJ Baldwin representing the Zepeda Network office, 6'1", 290. Listen, at 6'1", 290, he's an anchor for that Spiders defensive line, and he's also an anchor to the Zepeda Network office in our fight this season. Looking forward to getting to know TJ, and for those of you who already do, he's a young guy, so he's going to be around for a while, and I'm excited to get a chance to speak to him and pick his brain. I've heard nothing but awesome things about TJ. Last but not least, Mr. Joshua Harris. He's a Furman Paladin. He represents the World Network office. Plays wide receiver, 6'2", 200 pounds. He is a senior, so he's a veteran on this roster. He is somebody who guys look up to and want to be exactly like and who coaches love. He sits 12th on Furman's career receptions list with 116 catches. That alone is ridiculous. And he also led the receiving corps with 42 catches, 400 yards, and 2 touchdowns last year. Played a vital role in them going 10-3, winning 8 straight games, winning the SoCon, and getting all the way to the FCS quarterfinals. That right there is our list, guys. This is the player announcement segment. It's a pretty kick-ass list of a whole lot of kick-ass athletes who are a part of something so much bigger than themselves, and they're so aware of that. The fight against childhood cancer. I talked about us wanting to raise $250,000. Well, that starts with you, FCS fans. I'm calling you out right now. It's so easy to donate. And if you want to wait till you hear your honorary captain speak, learn what he's about, who he is as a person, that's fine. Stay tuned. It's on the way. But if you want to donate right now to one of these athletes or all of these athletes, go to FCSNationRadio.com. On the right side of the screen, big bold letters, is Alex's Lemonade Stand. We have an entire wing dedicated to the foundation on our website. There's where you can donate, pledge, leave a message, and just learn more about the initiative and what we have going on. It's so massive. Like I said, it's bigger than these athletes. It's bigger than myself. It's bigger than everybody involved. And trust me, we know that. Stick around. When we come back, it's the preview segment. Me and Kevin go at it. Go down the slate of games, figure out who's going to win, who's going to lose, and why. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
September is Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. Every day, more than 1,000 children worldwide are diagnosed with cancer. Northwestern Mutual is devoted to supporting the research that gives families and the survivors of cancer a better quality of life. They're looking to accelerate the search for better treatments and cures for childhood cancer while also supporting families undergoing treatment and survivors struggling with lasting effects. Since 2012, Northwestern Mutual has donated more than $50 million to the cause, which includes more than $30 million towards funding more than 600,000 hours of research through the company's partnership with Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation. The mission of Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation is to change the lives of children through funding impactful research, raising awareness, supporting families undergoing treatment, and empowering everyone to help find a cure for childhood cancer.
Welcome back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. It's now time for the preview segment. This is where Stone Labanowitz and I take a quick trip all over FCS Nation and preview the biggest games taking place in FCS football this week. Up first, number one, South Dakota State is at Southeastern Louisiana. Stone, we're going to be on the sidelines for this one. I think it'll be a good ball game for a long time here. Southeastern comes in, a lot of confident. They were able to defend their home turf at Strawberry Stadium last week against Eastern Washington, come away with a four-point victory. South Dakota State, kind of feel like, you know, with all the talk this week nationally, is there a problem in Brookings? What's wrong with the Jackrabbit? I expect them to come out and try to dispel any of that. But at the same time, I mean, by doing that, maybe this thing snowballs. I don't think so, but that is a legitimate possibility, right? You press too much. You try to do your job plus the guy next to your job. I think that they'll calm this thing down. They'll do what the Jackrabbits do. They'll hand the ball off to Amar Johnson a whole bunch, which is always going to be a good idea, right? That's never a bad idea to have Mark Gronowski turn around and hand the ball to Amar Johnson. I think after this ball game, we're not going to have near as many of these questions about the Jackrabbits as we do coming into it.
Yeah, to be completely blunt, I don't have much to add, Kev. I mean, you nailed that. I do think it's funny to utter the words, is there trouble in Brookings? I wish just pure satire we would have started this segment with that, like, oh man, what's going on in Brookings? Just so for all the Jacks fans listening, just to kind of get riled up, because they're so easily riled up. I would hate to line up against any one of the 22 guys on the South Dakota State roster following that week, following the game that they played against the Vikings. And it happens to be the Lions this week. Thankfully, they're at home and they're going to pack it out. I'm so excited to be there, boots on the ground, get eyes on this one. But I personally think, being fresh out of a locker room, that South Dakota State players are laughing at everybody right now. All of the headlines, the local beat writers, everybody asking questions on social media, they're looking, they're listening, they're acting as if they're not, but they are. And they're writing it down and they're taking names and they're laughing at all of us. And I think they take out all that frustration against Southeastern Louisiana. And Southeastern Louisiana grinded one out last week. Don't think they scored 28 this week. And I think South Dakota State had the point to prove. And it's almost like they've run out of points to prove, but they'll find a way to get it done.
Now, Stone, it's very cliche, right, for pundits and fans to say, well, they didn't play real well last week. I wouldn't want to be this team in practice this week.
Sure.
Is that a real thing or is that a fan thing? Or do you just, all right, last week is in the rearview mirror, right? You look at the film, you try to fix the error, but you don't intentionally make it a harder practice out of your routine just because you didn't look like you could beat the Green Bay Packers last week, do you? Or is that really a thing?
Oh, it's really a thing, Kevin. It is 100% really a thing. And there are a few layers to it, actually. One, from a player's perspective, you're told by your coaches to put it in the rear view, throw that tape away, throw in the garbage, all of these cliche things. But for teenagers and young 20-year-olds, that's not the case. These athletes hold themselves to a standard, and if they didn't live up to that standard last week, they're going to go get that lick back. They're going to go make sure that they put the right things on tape. And for their friends and their families watching these games, they're going to go make sure that they do their job better than they did last week. It's a real thing. And where it really applies, I think, and it's not spoken about enough, is these college age athletes. Yes, they're away at school and they're there to get a degree, but I think if you were to anonymously poll 90% of them, they'll tell you they're there to play football. So they've spent all week lingering on how they were made fun of last week, what play they screwed up, where they could have been better. That's what you do. What you do when you're sitting in class. So it's a real thing, Kev. It is cliche, yes, but I will never, ever, ever hesitate to bring it up as often as I can, because all these Jacks want to do is get that lick back.
Mercyhurst is at number two, Montana State. Stone, I read this as Mercyhurst instead of Hurst, because I do believe that after about 8 minutes are gone in this game, Mercyhurst is going to need a Mercyhurst, I think.
Well done right there. Well done. I think you do that off the top of your head. Hopefully you didn't have that written down. That was good. Montana State's gonna lay a beat down. A mercy rule to Hurst. Although it may be hard for general fans to find the parallels between Tommy Mellott and Kim Miller, they're present to my eyes at least. Both offensive staffs have opened up the playbook and let these guys air it out and take shots down the field.
Number three, Idaho, is at Abilene Christian. Stone, some people have Abilene Christian ranked in their polls. We don't. I struggle with who they've defeated to do that. Maybe it's a blindness on my part. Maybe this is a team. Look, they have a very good quarterback. Very good quarterback. But Northern Colorado shut them down last week on offense. And Northern Colorado, Ed Lamb is a fine defensive mind. He can scheme and game plan with the best of them. And what they did last week against Abilene Christian worked. And what people have tried to do to Idaho all season, well, ain't a bit of that work. I like Jason Eck here to do some different things, take advantage of the strengths that he has, which is running the football, playing defense, play the field position game, have the quarterback make a couple of plays. I think Idaho goes on the road here, Stone, and they're the same Idaho Vandals they've been all season. I don't look for a whole bunch to change here. I think Idaho probably is able to get past Abilene Christian on the road. It's a long trip, but I think Jason Eck and his boys will be up for it.
Yeah, I think so too. And instead of previewing this game, because if you ask me personally, I don't think there's much preview here. I think Idaho wins this one pretty easily and by a wide margin. I see this more of a spot to echo something that you started this preview with. And people have Abilene Christian ranked inside their top 25 polls. We're forward thinking. We look ahead. We understand who plays who and when somebody's going to play somebody. You can have Abilene Christian ranked inside your top 25 all you want. It's a waste of time because when Idaho beats them by 40 and holds them to under 75 yards rushing, they're going to be outside of your top 25. Poll, and there was another team, just using Lamar as an example, that deserves to be in this poll. And I don't think FCS fans are treated right, and I don't think FCS fans and teams are treated right when it comes to polling and ranking them. We do our due diligence, we do our homework, we understand who needs to be ranked and why, and this team should be here because X, Y, and Z. This is a spot to just echo that, Kev. I mean, for people who have Abilene Christian ranked inside their top 25, I don't know. If you're looking at that poll or you follow that poll, I would find a new home. And if it's not us already, then it should be.
Towson is at number four, NDS. SU. Stone, straight up, Towson should have beat Villanova last week.
Yeah.
They missed three field goals and lost by 1 point. So, I mean, they got to come in with a ton of confidence, right? I mean, Villanova was a top five team in our poll last week. They're 7 this week, but this is a team that's already stood toe-to-toe with what others perceive a top five team to be and that we perceived a top five team to be as recently as 1 week ago. So, Towson comes in, probably not going to be intimidated. I think this is a pretty good ball game for a while again. Against these North Dakota State Bison who come in after a win like that, Stone. How do you feel? Do you feel like, wow, we escaped? Whew. Or do you start getting like maybe the thoughts of we're a team of destiny, we can't be beat? I wonder what's going on inside that locker room in Fargo. Which one of those is it?
To be honest, I think it's probably the latter. I think it's maybe this is our year because you watched your quarterback, your senior quarterback, do what he did down the stretch and in very clutch moments came up big time. And I think that resonates with the entire locker room. It 100% resonates with the defensive roster that you have and everybody on the sideline when you're on the field. So for that reason, I think the latter. But when we're talking about Towson, I think this is less about Towson and more about Villanova, touching on last week. We talked about Villanova not having the schedule to give FCS fans a proper gauge of who they are and how good they are. And I'll say after last week, we're not super, super confident having Villanova at 7. But until somebody can do them dirty, I think they're obviously deserving to stay. And it's warranted that they're a top 10 team playoff after playoff. But yeah, Kev, I think very similar to South Dakota State. I would hate to be the opponent this week. And that just so happens to be Towson. I think North Dakota State runs the score up and that defense boa constricts the Towson Tigers and holds them to under 10 points.
Drake is at number 5, South Dakota. Normally this would be one we'd spend about 10 seconds on, right? But Drake has looked pretty good this year. They beat Eastern Washington on the road. They got any hope to go to USD and do the same thing?
I don't think so. This is a South Dakota team who's very old, very experienced, has the guys, has the quarterback. And I think they're coached to play some of the most clean football that the country has to offer. And yes, I have a little bit of Missouri Valley bias, but I think rightfully so, because the Missouri Valley competes for a national championship every year. These are games you don't take lightly. They're just not. And I say that coming after a week where North Dakota State literally lost to East Tennessee, depending on who you ask, apparently they lost. But I think this is a spot too where South Dakota does not take Drake lightly and they blow them out. I don't see any more here. I think it's a double-digit spread and it should be, and it's warranted. And I think Aiden Bauman, we've we've been waiting for his breakout game of the year, and I'll just keep saying it until it happens.
And we got a couple of these in a row now, right? We got number 6 Central Arkansas going to Arkansas Pine Bluff. Look, I want to seriously break down this game, but we're on a show clock here, man. We don't have an hour and a half or 3 hours, right? So, I mean, I just suffice to say that there's going to be a certain fan base is totally going to get this and know what I'm saying. I expect getting Pine Bluff to be a verb again, and let's just move on. Number 7 Villanova is at Maryland of the FBS. Nova won't win this game, but I bet they play better on offense and prove that last week was an aberration, I think. I expect that, but Maryland's a pretty good football team, and Villanova thinks they are, and a lot of people think Villanova is. I expect a better showing out of them than some people might think in this one. Do you disagree?
I don't actually disagree, and I just kind of was down on Villanova 2 seconds ago, but I don't disagree with what you're saying, because I think if you're Villanova and you're the leader of that team and Connor Watkins, you did sneak out of that game last week. Following that is a Maryland team where you have nothing to lose, and you're going to just empty out the clip early in this game. And if they can jump out to a 10-7 lead and this game finishes, I don't know, 28-21, then it's a win for us who count moral victories. I do, and I hope that Villanova gets out of there with a moral victory because they need it. Their confidence is low right now.
San Diego is at number 8, North Dakota. San Diego has gone into places and won before. They have won FCS playoff games, but I don't think this is that San Diego type of a team. I don't think there's a whole lot to see here, Stone. Any objection to moving on to the next one?
No, move right along here. UND is the team opposite of Villanova, just riding a confidence high right now. They're a dangerous one.
Utah Tech is at UC Davis. I think Utah Tech is a team that's not very good either. They have some building blocks. They looked better last week when they put that left-handed quarterback in there who was the backup. But UC Davis, look, they have struggled a little bit on offense. In the red zone, their offensive line needs to do what they have been doing in the past, which is when you get inside the red zone, push them around. No field goals, no turnovers. Number 9, UC Davis, I think, will get that house in order this week against Utah Tech, and I expect them to really have one of those nothing to see here type games. An exact opposite of the last 4 that we went over, Stone. Number 21, Western Carolina travels from the mountains of North Carolina to the mountains of Montana to take on number 10, Montana Grizzlies. Stone, what's wrong with the Catamounts offense? I don't get it. Last year, explosive play after explosive play, 40 points scored. They're struggling to get to 24 this year. And I know that the running back is now playing for Pitt, who's going to play Youngstown State this week. And I know that some of the guys maybe aren't producing as well as they're going to, but this is a game if you're Western Carolina. Last week was a must win against Elon, or else you were coming into Missoula 0-4. I think this is still a must win for Western Carolina if they want to have any hope of making the FCS playoffs and not winning the Southern Conference.
What's wrong with Western Carolina? I hate to point the finger at one guy, but I feel like I have to because I've watched Western Carolina almost be 0-4. The absence of Desmond Reed is detrimental to this offense, and it's been glaring for those who paid close attention to Desmond Reed. Desmond Reed, who you mentioned, a Pittsburgh Panther right now, taking on the Penguins this week. But when you have a guy like Desmond that teams have to prepare for and that you have to get a certain amount of touches, Desmond Reed, a guy you have to get double-digit touches, whether you line them up out of receiver or whether you hand them off the ball in the backfield. And Western Carolina is just missing that. And you're watching Paul Gonzalez just reach and try to be Superman. And whenever you have a quarterback that's super high on confidence, trying to play like Superman and do things extra, it typically can hurt a team overall. When you're watching a guy who is so high and so confident last year now trying to do too much and kind of get the sense that he doesn't have confidence in the guys around him, it's just they're trying to figure it out right before our eyes. And I think that's a huge problem with a team that had a lot of expectations. It's just this whirlwind of things, a concoction that make this Western Carolina team not that good at the moment. And Kev, you talked about this being a good game. Montana's favored by 16.5 points. I don't agree with that. Don't agree with that at all. It makes me scratch my head, but at the same time, it makes me think that Western Carolina is just not what it was last year.
Number 17, SEMO, is at number 11, Southern Illinois. Stone, bad news from the quarterback room for the Salukis earlier this week.
Yeah, just about as bad as news gets. DJ Williams out for the remainder of the season, going to require some surgery, but here's where things get worse. We have a quarterback now playing in the biggest game of his college career, his first collegiate start, Southern Illinois, hosting SEMO. Coach Two, Paxton DeLorean, a stone-cold quarterback. I don't know what side of the fence I stand on, but I tend to think that it's the side of reality, and I think that this isn't good for Southern Illinois. I do know Nick Hill, head coach, and calls the plays alongside Blake Rowland, will have something up his sleeve. You're going to see some double passes. You're going to see a lot of end-around stuff. Guys moving from formation to formation. They're going to throw eight different formations at SEMO, but I just don't know how you can get out of this game with a win. I don't think it's possible. It's really, really bad news for Southern Illinois, and they got to figure it out. But good luck to Hunter Simmons. I know him personally, and he's a gamer type. So if he does find a rhythm, he's one of those quarterbacks who gets really hot and does not cool off, but this just isn't the game for that.
The Citadel Bulldogs hit the road to Macon, Georgia to take on the number 15 Mercer Bears. Stone, a lot of optimism in Charleston. They won 54-0 last week. It was against North Greenville, who's a pretty good Division II team, already beat Charleston Southern.
Who?
We're in the ball game against South Carolina State until the last 2 minutes. So it's already been a successful season for the Citadel Bulldogs. Everything else is gravy after this. But this is a team's going to come in there with an experienced quarterback, some playmaking wide receivers, some guys who can run the football, and a defense that is going to be able to get a couple of stops. I will say this, Stone. The Citadel will rush the ball for more than 29 yards against Mercer. All right? So there won't be any of that after this is over. And I have a pretty good feeling about this game. Playing with house money, do your own cliche here. But this Citadel team believes in themselves and each other. And with the way college football is now, Stone, this is not the same team the Citadel had last year. There's some of the same guys, a lot of the same guys, but there's new guys who didn't experience that. And they're going to Macon with an idea that they can win the football game. And you know what? They can. It's time for us to take a quick break, y'all, and come back for the next segment and see if Stone Labanowitz still has a job. We'll be right back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
FCS Nation, what's going on? It's segment four, and that's typically an interview segment. This one I'm super excited for. I'm bringing on Brian Marceau from Tubbs at the Club. You can follow Brian at Twitter, at Brian Marceau. Marceau, for those of you who aren't spelling majors, M-A-R-C-E-A-U, and Brian from Tubbs at the Club. Tubbs at the Club, you can follow him at Tubbs at the Club. He's the guy, all things Idaho. Number three ranked team in the country. We got a lot of things to talk about, Brian. But first off, thanks for hopping on FCS Nation.
Good to be here, man. I've been a listener for a while.
I want to talk all things Idaho. The Vandals seem like an enigma to me personally. I just can't figure them out. And I'm somebody who studies the game on a regular basis. I love cracking tape. ESPN Plus is my baby. And I make sure to re-up my subscription each and every month that it comes around. This Vandals team 2-1, a loss to Oregon, which we'll talk about, a win at Wyoming, an FBS dub, and of course a shellacking in a rematch in a big playoff matchup last season against the UAlbany Great Danes. I want to start where, of course, everybody knows I'm going to start, and that's on the offensive side of the ball in the quarterback position. I've had conversations with Kevin Marshall, my co-host, about this often, about this new transfer portal era, kids coming and going, and you're watching some of the best players on FCS teams make a jump, go try to make six figures real quick. And a lot of them have had success, and a lot of them you don't hear from and you won't hear from ever again. Let's start with Giovanni McCoy, now at Oregon State. Phenomenal season last year, brings Idaho back into national relevance. If you're a general fan, if you're a real fan, you've known that it's always been there. And when Eck was coming in, things were going to change. But your initial thoughts when Giovanni McCoy packed his bags and hopped on the Greyhound?
Not as much anxiety as you might guess. So McCoy, hey, like, not going to take away anything from McCoy's time here.
Of course.
Won the Jerry Rice Award, big time, all like first team All-Big Sky last year. Like, jury's in, the guy's good. Idaho last season, second half of the year, did not produce offensively the way like I feel they're reputationally understood to. So, and what I'm referencing is, hey, in games McCoy started, Idaho didn't break 30 after October 7th. That was Cal Poly. Every game after that, and hey, that was the meat of Idaho's schedule last year, you know, like Montana State's playoff games. But Idaho didn't actually score that well the back half of the year, minus the Idaho State game when Jack Lane played and threw six touchdown passes. So there's, you know, you lose a star, you know, you lose a guy you identify with. Yeah, you miss him. But, you know, the follow-up question is, we care about Idaho getting better. And what the little we'd seen of Jack Lane prior was that the offense is going to have to look different. He doesn't run the same way McCoy does, but he makes potentially faster decisions. You're going to see probably more diverse set of play calls. And the games that Jack Lane played, you saw a lot more like tight end receptions. So we just thought, hey, the offense is going to look different, but we like the guy that we've seen. And again, I mean, Idaho low-key relied on defense for essentially all of their good wins in 2023, minus Nevada early. So, and to me, I thought, okay, well, maybe this is how Idaho takes the next step offensively, is we just have a guy who has a different set of play calls to go to.
I mean, you just wrapped. I mean, we just kicked this thing off. Poetic, Brian, so many things that I want to touch on right there. I'll start with the anxiety line that you threw out there first. I felt the exact same way, and I thought I was alone. And I thought from an outsider's perspective, I'm a South Florida guy. It's tough to catch anything Idaho. But the Vandals, of course, I pay attention to every single week. But I felt the same way you did. I didn't have as much anxiety as I thought most FCS fans who just kind of crumbled Idaho up and threw them away. You forget who's at the helm and Jason Eck. And another part of it, I think, was Jack Lane. Like, there's upside there. People inside the facility knew that Jack Lane could play ball. And when Javonte McCoy left town, you thought all hell was going to break loose, but nobody said a peep. Do you think that's because of Jack Lane, or more so having trust and faith in Jason Eck calling plays and just being the coach that he is?
It's both. I mean, look, Jack Lane, reputationally, the coaching staff and like interviews we've done, different interviews they do, like Jack Lane has been praised as having great, the offense having like maybe being the, having the like highest level view of a quarterback Jason Eck to work with. Like, they say good things about him, and the fruits we'd seen of Jack Lane play. It was only against lower, you know, lower level teams for the most part, but still, like, you play the games you can, and Lane had produced. So that's one. But the other is, look, I mean, Jason Eck, when he was OC at South Dakota, like, they had issues with injury. Like, hey, Mark Gronowski goes out in the spring season, then Chris Oladokun comes in and he's in the NFL, and then Mark Gronowski comes back after, you know, once Oladokun's gone. So on his own, you know, he's shown the ability to have more than one QB who you can trust as a starter. And look, Eck's in year three. You know, Idaho produced very well those first 2 years, but we're now getting to the point that like the cupboard is completely guys that Eck and his staff recruited. Yeah. So, you know, that's where the confidence comes, is having seen the guy play, but also Eck has essentially done nothing wrong since he's been in Moscow and has done a lot of stuff right. So, you know, we trust both ends. We saw the guy play, but we've also seen Eck knows what he's doing. So what do you do? Like, there's no reason to do anything but trust him so far.
Having a chat here, Brian Marceau, Tubbs at the club, all things Idaho. Brian, you're two for two. Let's keep this thing rolling. I mean, we've talked about Javonte McCoy. We've talked about Jack Lane, two guys who aren't even in the lineup for the Idaho Vandals. And for you fans out there who don't prefer offense or are annoyed at how much I like to talk about quarterbacks, I promise you this is the last one. Jack Wagner, it's going to be a 2-3-pronged question, only because I like talking about quarterbacks so much, Brian. I think Jack Wagner is somebody 90% of us didn't have a clue who he was, where he's from, how old he is, what he studies, or what Jason Eck thinks about him. But he's jolted into this lineup, and I think off rip, when you watch, it's clear that he's not asked to do too much. When you go through some of the attempts and the completions through the weeks, obviously Oregon got jolted in 0-2 in one of those, an interception, and then Wyoming 12 completions on 21 attempts, and Albany 10 completions on 20 attempts. So 43 attempts throughout two full games, Jack Wagner under center. Is this by design that Jason Eck is not putting a lot on Jack Wagner's plate?
I believe so. And I'm not going to reference the Oregon game, because you're right, he was in there for two passes. But the, you know, you look at what happened, Wyoming, Wagner starts out 8 for 8, finishes 12 of 21. So the set hit after going 8 for 8, he goes 4 of 13. But from what I saw, I feel like Wagner is... The play calls for Wagner are different than Lane, where Wagner, there mostly is a couple of receivers you're keying in on, specifically Jordan Dwyer, who's emerged as a clear number one receiver for Idaho, yeah. caught two touchdown passes on six catches last week. So, yeah, I believe they're asking Wagner to do less. The big deal for me is, like, they're letting Wagner throw it. He's got an arm. And Eck is, in different interviews, described Wagner as probably having the best arm on the team, which doesn't mean best quarterback, but best arm. So they're letting Wagner show that he can stretch the field some. You know, the completion percentage is around, it's 51%. So certainly not what you would have expected with Jack Lane at this point, but the game plan's different. It's make sure that Jack Wagner keeps the defense honest and make sure that gives the running backs enough room so they can control, you know, the game on the ground. And that's how you go. That's how Idaho's gone 2-0 with a FBS win as well. So, I mean, Wagner needs to do enough to help, you know, Idaho win the games. But this isn't like the game plan isn't, hey, Jack Wagner's going to put the team on his back and win. He just needs to produce and avoid mistakes. And he's been doing that.
Sure. And he's 2-0 so far. And that's something that you pointed out. And I think we shouldn't hesitate to point that out. This team hasn't lost since Jack Wagner's been at the helm. So you should have all the faith in the world in this team. And full transparency, I may
or may not have to cut this out of the interview, but myself, Kevin Marshall, we did have a conversation about putting the Vandals at one based off of how South Dakota State played last week. Like, we had the conversation. Now, was it a very short, maybe two-sentence conversation? Yeah, it was. Did I yell at Kevin? Yes, I did. Kevin is the one who brought it up. Okay, nonetheless, I think it's worth a conversation when you talk about resume and you talk about what this team looked like and what they did in Eugene. They did to Dan Lanning's Oregon Ducks. Like, just scary, I think, for the rest of the subdivision, because when you really crack the tape and you watch what X able to do, especially now with Jack Wagner, so much 12 personnel, you see two tight ends in the backfield, sniff on the edge, whatever it is, he's moving them all across the formation. He's going to throw eight or nine formations at you through the course of four quarters. Like, Eck is a mastermind, and I love what he's doing offensively. All right, moving on to the other side of the ball. The more dominant phase for the Vandals, and you talked about them coming off of what was, I don't know, call them the leaders of the team in 2023, especially the back half, and that's the Idaho Vandals defense. There are guys I want you to shout out, guys I want you to bring to light that I think the general fan who will catch an Idaho game needs to look out for. Some of the stats that I've pulled, you see so many defensive linemen in and out of the game. Keyshawn is a guy that I think deserves, I don't know, 60 seconds in this interview right now, and the sacks that this team's accumulated. I mean, ridiculous. Four total sacks last week just in itself. They held Albany. This one's just tough to stomach for me. Held Albany to just 60 yards rushing on the day. If I'm a Great Dane in that post-game locker room, I'm sure it's brought up. It's the first thing brought up. And that offensive line probably is the worst film session that they have to go through. Some other things that I've noted with this Idaho Vandal defense: six full quarters without giving up a touchdown between the first quarter of the Wyoming game and the fourth quarter of the Albany game. Ridiculous. Cannot wrap my mind around that. What's working so well for the Vandal defense?
Broadly everything, but it starts it starts up front. X been playing 10 to 11 guys on the D-line. And a lot of these guys are returners. So, yeah, hey, transfer portal era, you're always horrified. A player does well, they're going to bail. And though Idaho did lose some defensive talent last year to the portal, they kept all of their guys on the D-line. So Keyshawn James Newby, he transferred to Idaho from Montana Tech, picked up 5.5 sacks last year, wasn't, you know, all big sky level contributor last year. Yeah, well, three games into the season, that counts two FBS games. He's already got six sacks. So, Keyshawn James Newby, honestly, to me, he seems like you could brain dead. Throw him in as a potential Buck Buchanan Award finalist. He's been fantastic. And there are times where he certainly feels like the heart and soul. Him and strong safety Tommy McCormick feel like the heart and soul of this Vandal defense. But since we're talking D-line too, in addition to Newby getting to the quarterback, sophomore Dallas Afalava, he's got 2.5 sacks, 3.5 TFLs. Eck named Afalava the defensive MVP for Idaho of the Albany game. And Afalava, they said sophomore, starter as a freshman last season. He was good last year, and he looks like he's taking a developmental step, you know, in his position. The other thing I just got to bring up too is that the fact of being able to have those 10 or 11 guys, I mean, you're going to have some impact players, guys like Zach Krotzer, who has only one listed, he has a half listed sack, but he's another guy, number 96, who you're going to see make a couple plays each game. Guys like Amari Notice, number 92, he's one of the two big bodies, obviously biggest bodies Idaho has up front. You're going to see him make a couple plays as a run stopper. So, I mean, phase one, hey, what's going well? The D-line is getting to they're getting to the quarterback, they're stuffing the run, but then because of that depth too, in all three Idaho games so far, Idaho has been getting to the quarterback better as the game wears on, better as we get into the third and fourth quarter, which is something even though Idaho was strong last year defensively, I felt like we didn't see it to that degree at all in 2023. And so far, man, that they're just monsters up front. And then the linebacking crew, it's younger, but they've taken developmental steps to the secondary at the cornerback position, had to be bolstered largely through transfer portal. But so far, Idaho seems to essentially be hitting at all three levels.
Yeah, shout out to Coach Lonnie Pangupo, defensive line coach, holding it down. I feel like I was a part of the integration of the hockey shift defensive line subs. You don't see it on the offensive side, but you do see it on the defensive side. In, I don't know, call it 21 positions on the field. The most important thing, depending on who you ask, it's about rhythm, finding rhythm. Defensive line, it's not. It's about being fresh. And when you can shift 8, 9, 10, 11 guys in and out of the game and you have fresh legs, first off, let me revert to the fact that for this to be the case, you have to have a very tight-knit core. I'd imagine that defensive line room, every film session, every time they're out there on the field, they're having the most fun and they have the best relationship. They seem selfless. You're watching guys just emerge as stars, and it's every other week. You talked about who got tagged the MVP of the game. He won't get tagged again the rest of the season. It's going to be another guy, and another guy is going to fill his role. So I think the defensive line is most definitely leading the way. And it's obvious, it pops on the TV screen. They're just getting after the passer, and it allows them to play more man coverage on the back end and heat you up on first and 10, second and 10 exotic blitzes. It's all going well for the Idaho Vandals defense. Let's talk goals. Again, having a chat here with Brian Marceau, Tubbs at the Club. You can follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Marceau. And of course, Tubbs at the Club at Tubbs at the Club. Goals for this Vandals team. On paper, they don't have enough. In their heads, delusion or not, they think they do, and they're playing like it. And I think that counts for something. If you were to ask Coach Jason Eck right now what his goal is for this 2024-2025 Idaho Vandals team, what would you say he says?
Well, it has to be at least first round playoff bye. Has to be a top eight seed. Although with how they're playing defensively, they seem special. Like they were good last year.
They do.
But they played a ton of underclassmen last year, and with since you know so many of them came back, you're seeing natural improvement from. Like I said, Dallas Offalov was a starter as a freshman. Well, like hey, now he's a sophomore and he's doing pretty dang well. Talked about Keyshawn James Newby. Last year was his first year as a D1 player, and he produced. Well, no, like he's good. Like this, he was good last year, and this is a different level. So you know, if we ignore the fact that Jason Eck's the coach, like hey, let's pretend this was a Jay Hill Weber State team three years ago. You'd probably be saying like, yeah, first round playoffs, and we're top three in the country. If you're top three in the country and you earn it, which I think Idaho has, you can't knock Frisco out of the discussion. And if you, as long as you're able to accept it defensively, this is who this team is. I know Jason Eck's the coach. This is a defense first team. Once you accept that, I feel like suddenly the confusion about like, hey, how is Idaho who they are without all the guys they lost from last year? It's good. We saw the intimations of what this could become last season with underclassmen producing defensively. So, oh, dude, I think talking Frisco isn't off the table yet. We'll see. We got to see how Wagner and Lane, if he comes back, how things look offensively, because it's a different world doing this against Montana State on the road instead of Albany at home. Like, not the same thing. But look, we have the sample size we have. You're not going to tell me Idaho's done anything but deliver so far this season.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. All right. So Brian Marceau hypothetically asked Jason Eck what he thought the goals of his team were, and he talked about having a first round bye, being a top eight seed. Let me rephrase that
because so one of the things that's fun about Eck is other than the fact that like he knows what he's doing and he's a real normal person who just happens to be smart and coaches the football team and love is
yep.
he doesn't over or under promise. So I feel that maybe what he would say is hosting through the semifinals.
We'll
see what we get that far.
Yeah, no, that sounds more like Jason Eck. You got it. I talked about Jason Eck being an enigma. I think it's just something that people just don't understand. You talked about him being really smart, you talked about him being a normal person, and you also talked about him being one of the best football coaches in the FCS, let alone probably college football right now with what he's putting on display and what he's shown through the first 3 weeks. Your opinion, Brian, what makes him so good as a coach? If you were to ask me, I would tell you it's his personality. And I think there are layers to that. And I could probably wrap on that for 10 minutes, but I do truly think it's his personality and it's what the fans think of him. It's the vibe around the facility. It's the relationship that he has with walk-ons and his star players and just the energy that he brings. I think pulling the phone out on the plane, like that crap goes a long way for somebody like me. Like that's what I look for. I don't want to be on a knee going through prayer pregame in our locker room and have a coach screaming at me about all four quarters. I think Eck has a different style to him, a style that I think his team takes to. He left Brookings and he's still beloved in Brookings. And I think one of every 10 coaches, that's the case when you look FCS and FBS. So I'd say personality, but Brian, for you, put a finger on it, give the audience an answer as to why. And you're somebody who knows better than 98% of people that could possibly come on the show and talk Vandals. What is it for you that makes X such a good coach?
You hit the personality part that matters. One, he's been open since press conference one at Idaho that he he wants the group of people he has to dictate, you know, strategy, to dictate decisions. So the fact of, yeah, he's flexible, but look, Peter Harriman for Spokesman Review wrote about this at the start of the season. I mean, before Eck went into coaching, he was pretty dang close to becoming a lawyer. Like, he's a smart dude who absolutely, he's great relating to players and great with the fan base and does all that. But then he's good. So it's not like a technocrat who's like completely obsessive of, you know, simply like, hey, what's on the field be produced. He understands the personal element when you're talking about with players, when talking about people outside of the game. He gets that. But he also obviously gets the game part, and he gets being flexible with the game part in a way that, I mean, that's the fact of how much this team's offensive personality had to change, going from Giovanni McCoy to Jack Lane, and then immediately has to change again with Jack Lane going down, Jack Wagner coming back in. Wagner's only been a starting quarterback for like 2 years. He started one year of high school.
He's a baby. He's a red shirt freshman. Yeah. He's a $190, and that's probably a little generous. I know a thing or two about being generous when it comes to the height and the weight. Yeah, yeah. Keep going. I don't mean to cut you off, but Jack Wagner is a pup.
You largely, to me, like, and again, all the personality stuff probably matters first. But like they're open to new information. They're open to the use of analytics. They're open to adjusting their use of analytics based off who their personnel are. They're open to adjusting strategy based off how they need to be. So you don't have issues with, let's say, stubbornness about the team needs to win this way in advance. As like, not a shout out, not a call out to Montana, but like, hey, Bobby Houck's like famously stubborn. And he's one of the most successful coaches in the history of Big Sky Conference. So again, not a put down. But Eck has a little bit of a new school approach where he's got the intensity, he's got the competence, but he also understands the need to be flexible in the world we live in the transfer era we live in. And that, to me, that's what the whole package is. You got the personality part, but he's also smart, and smart in a sense of relating both on the field and to the people in front of him who he needs to deliver for him week in, week out, regardless of how much the game plan is changing, which, again, like we've seen, it's changed a ton over the course of 3 weeks.
Mr. Brian Marceau on the money. I do want to touch on a few things there. One, Bobby Howe being stubborn. Yeah, on one hand, and of course, like you said, I'll preface it the same way. Can't take anything away from Bobby Howe. Arguably one of the GOATs. The stubbornness, though, is right there in broad daylight. You're talking about a Grizz team who can't figure out who their quarterback is, and a Vandals team who doesn't give a damn who their quarterback is. So it's a tale of two tapes, honestly, and one team struggling and one team's not. And Montana, obviously, just racking up wins, and they're going to continue to do so. Playing in their home fort is very easy, and I think they get carried through a lot of games, but I do think they'll stumble. So I'll say that about Bobby Houck. But I love everything you touched on with Eck. I think with what you said and what I said about his personality, parlaying them together is the product that we're seeing on the field right now, and it's answers to questions that people had as to who is this guy? Who's the guy who does selfie videos every week? Who is the guy who's singing and dancing? Like, he can dance and has a good voice. It's Jason Eck. I'm a huge fan, and I think he has a lot more in store for us in 2024. Brian, when you look at his schedule, this remaining schedule, Abilene Christian on deck, UC Davis, a team that I'm very high on, and I wasn't at the beginning of the season, but Kevin Marshall just hammered it home that this team is really good, and they play just about as good a defense as anybody else in the country. Skip who they got after that, Northern Arizona. That should be a win. That's inside the dome. And then Montana State. We can go down the list, but just which game stands out to you as the most, or I'll say the best gauge of this Idaho team in their level?
I'd have to say Montana State on the road, because Montana State has, like, I mean, they have a relatively similar resume to Idaho right now of a Mountain West win.
Yep.
Pretty easily handling the FCS teams they played. Montana State also, like, they've had to adjust a little bit with, you know, it's just Tommy Malott now. You no longer have Sean Chambers and going back and forth. There's a little bit of question about, like, what that means for Montana State. I think Montana State looks like they know exactly who they are.
Yep.
So if Idaho's a team that is, you know, that is, has aspirations of hosting into a semifinal, then you got to be able to produce and beat teams at the level of Montana State. So yeah, no, that on paper, that's the biggest test.
I love it. That's going to do it. Mr. Brian Marceau, at Brian Marceau on Twitter, at Tubbs at the club. We're talking all things Idaho here, and I think we just hit about every single box that we possibly could. keep an eye on this Idaho Vandals team. I mean, if it isn't obvious what FCS Nation thinks about them, Kevin Marshall, myself, I mean, we just dedicated an entire segment to it this week because we think more people should be talking about them. They're a top five team in the country, and at this point, a bona fide top five team in the country. So look out. Abilene Christian on deck. They hit the road. 5 p.m. kick over here for you East Coast guys. I'm excited for it. I think this team's going to keep rocking and rolling. I'm excited to see Jack Wagner kind of just climb the ladder and gain confidence that this season goes on. Your prediction for the season, Brian, do you want to keep it close to the vest, or do you think this team's quarterfinalists or semifinalists? Do you want to make a bold prediction or no?
I mean, I still think quarterfinalists for sure. I think quarterfinalists for sure, because again, like, the offense is a little bit of a wild card just because we've seen Wagner twice. We don't know what that development's going to look like.
Sure.
But this defense is they're good. You can win a lot of games with a team producing defensively like Idaho is.
Were you just about to utter elite?
Yeah.
I could kind of hear it. No, this defense is elite. We can call it that, what they put on display. Ryan, before we wrap, I do have, I'm not going to call it a bone to pick with you, but a question to ask you more so. You mentioned Jay Hill, Weber State head coach, 3 years ago. And I don't remember exactly in which the context that you gave, but did you say something like, or did you mean like, it's not a Jay Hill at Weber State 3 years ago where he's going to bow out in the first round of the playoffs? Is that what you meant by that?
That's a way of putting it. No, I meant, I was more saying if you forget that
Jason. I would be asking?
Okay. I'm assuming you lost some money on Jay Hill.
No, I beat Jay Hill first round of the playoffs 3 years ago, and he bowed out against my Saluki Dogs, who he was favored by at least double digits against. Yeah, so I thought, is Brian taking a shot at me? Of course, like, if Jay Hill's, you know, they're loose to Southern Illinois 3 years ago, like, that's nothing Jason Eck would do. No.
For the future.
Well, that was done organically.
I do know this for the future now. No, it's more like, hey, the point of not saying that out loud is just from the Idaho world, where the fan base is. It's a lot easier for teams for fan bases to effortlessly identify their quarterback, or like, hey, last year Hayden had one of the best receivers in the history of the program.
Mm-hmm.
Very easily, very easy.
Love that you said that.
Fan base say like, hey, that's who this team is. But if you keep in mind what the team was defensively last year, if you keep in mind, like, we can point to teams who've made, you know, runs in semifinals where it's often elite defense and offense that does enough. If you keep that, the fact that template exists, that's how I think you get over the fact that, hey, are we 100% sure what Idaho's offense is going to look like, you know, as the season progresses? No. And if they're going to do this defensively, like, it doesn't matter as much that, like, offensively, they got to produce enough.
Ding, 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 ding. Brian put a stamp on it. That was lovely. I appreciate you for joining the show. Again, follow Brian Marceau, the encyclopedia all things Idaho, and please follow Tubbs at the club. Brian, thanks so much for hopping on. I'm excited to watch this team, and I'm excited to pick your brain in the future. Whenever I have any questions breaking down tape, I'm going to say, hey, who is this? Why is he in that position? And what should I expect from him moving forward? You got me, right?
Absolutely.
Appreciate you so much. All right, that was Brian Marceau. When you come back, we'll be making picks, the pick segment. Me and Kevin, super hot, super, super hot. You're listening to FCS Nation Radio on the Palmetto Radio Network.
Thanks for hanging with us during the break. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Networks. Now, my favorite time of the week, it's the pick segment. Y'all, this is where Stone Labanowitz and I butt face mask and pick the biggest games taking place in FCS football this week. Up first, number one, South Dakota State is at Southeastern Louisiana. Stone will be there. Who you got?
Give me the Jacks here, Kev, 35-17. I'm hoping this is a good game for two quarters. We can enjoy ourselves on the sideline, watch these guys go at it. I'm hoping and I'm thinking, well, we kind of know the answer to that. We've seen and we have people in-house telling us these things, but it's going to be a packed house, pretty much sold out for when they host the Jacks. So I think it's a crowd that can get to South Dakota State, but all in all, I think they pull away here in the third, fourth quarter, like they tend to do this season, 35-17 to finish.
I agree. I don't think the Jackrabbits will come out flat this week, and I like them to get it together again on offense. Take number one. South Dakota State on the road over Southeastern Louisiana, 34-17. Mercyhurst is at number two, Montana State.
There's not much to see here. Montana State 52, Mercyhurst 7.
I mean, all mocking of the region of my birth aside there, Labanowitz. You're right. There is not much to see here. And the Bobcats will win this one by as many as they want. Number three, Idaho is at Abilene Christian.
Let's copy-paste that. Idaho's going to win by however many points they want to win by. And just get the hell out of these guys' way. I think Idaho 49, Abilene Christian 10.
I don't think it's going to be like that now, Labanowitz. But the Vandals can really run the ball. and Abilene Christian struggled to stop Northern Colorado running the football last week. A whole lot of trouble stopping it, and that's bad news for ACU. Take number 3, Idaho, on the road over Abilene Christian, 31-17. Towson is at number 4, North Dakota State.
The Bison got their scare out of the way. It is smooth sailing ahead, and this Towson team's going to take a beating here. 52-7, the final.
Look, we talked about it in the preview segment. Towson should have beat top 5 Villanova last week. Missed 3 field goals, lost by 1 point. Got to get that out of your system. And you know what? You're feeling kind of some way about how you played last week and how do you get rewarded? You get to fly from Baltimore to Fargo to face a North Dakota State team that's a little bit angry and a little bit upset too. Even though they won their football game, I just think that the Bison come out with a fire in their humps in this one and they take it to Towson. Take number 4, North Dakota State at home in the Fargo Dome, 28-7. Drake is at number 5, South Dakota.
Yeah, this is Aiden Bauman. This is the Aiden Bauman special right here, 35-10. The Yotes get it done.
Take number 5, South Dakota at home over Drake, 42-14. Number 6, Central Arkansas is at Arkansas Pine Bluff.
Central Arkansas, 38, Pine Bluff, 14. I think this is a game where Will McElvain's a little quiet and Shendere goes for 200 yards rushing.
The Bears are good, and Arkansas Pine Bluff isn't. Take number 6, UCA on the road over Arkansas Pine Bluff, 45-10. Number 7, Villanova is at Maryland of the FBS.
Yeah, a lot to a little. Give me the Terps here, 49-10. I think Villanova has a lot of holes in their game, and there's a team to expose them. It's an FBS Maryland, so I don't like this one for the Cats.
Look, it's a successful game for Villanova if they can come out and look better on offense. String together a couple drives, put some points on the board. Get last week out of your mind, which I think they'll be able to do. They won't win the football game, but they'll hang around in it for a while. Take Maryland over number 7, Villanova, 38-20. San Diego is at number 5, North Dakota.
It determines what you deem as a boring game, but I think this is a boring game that finishes the way of North Dakota, 28-14. I just think that none of these teams have any offensive firepower, but are really weird and quirky in how they dial up plays and how they handle certain situations. So give me the Fighting Hawks here, 28-14.
San Diego will stay classy for a little while, but the Fighting Hawks will put them in a glass case of emotion. Take number 5, North Dakota at home, 41-12. Utah Tech is at number 9, UC Davis.
Yeah, UC Davis, I'm a huge fan of this team. You turned me on to them in the offseason. Whoa.
I turned you on in the offseason.
Whoa.
It was that picture I sent you when I had brown sugar in my belly button, wasn't it?
I like UC Davis a lot here. I'm a huge fan of them. Kevin has made me a fan of them by giving me good X's and O's analysis to who they are as a football team. I think they win this one 30-14.
The Aggies roll here. Take number 9, UC Davis at home over Utah Tech, 35-14. Number 21, Western Carolina, is at number 10, Montana. Catamounts coming to Grizz Country, coming off a big win. Stone, but their offense is still puzzling. We talked about it earlier. Hard game to pick for me, but I'm going with Montana at home. Over number 21, Western Carolina, 27-24. Number 17, SEMO, is at number 11, Southern Illinois.
I've never asked for you to let me do this, but is this a spot where I can plead the 5th?
Sure, you can do that.
No, I can't do that because you face the music when your Citadel Bulldogs are about to get blown out, and you're going to have to do that here in like 2 minutes. So I got to face the music here too. Give me SEMO, 24-21, last second field goal. That's how these games go. Nonetheless, I think SEMO walks out of Saluki Stadium with a dub. Hate it, want to throw up, but is what it is.
It's really not a tough decision for me. Take number 17, SEMO, on the road over number 11, Southern Illinois, 27-17. Number 12, Sacramento State, is at Texas A&M Commerce.
Hornets sting them, 38-10.
Hornets dominated Nichols last week, and I think they do the same here. Take number 12, Sac State, on the road over Texas A&M Commerce, 38-21. Number 13, Tarleton State, is at North Alabama.
I talked about how this is a weird game, and I have this one circled. Yeah, that's still the case, but I think Tarleton State finds a way to squeak out of here. Too many skill players, too many places to go with the football. 27-24 the finish. This is a close one, and another heartbreak for Dearman and the squad.
I agree. This is going to be a sneaky good game, y'all. Take number 13, Tarleton State, on the road in the Shoals over North Alabama, 34-28. Furman is at number 14, William & Mary.
I think they tried to get this one, although I think this one also is a pretty close game. But I think they'll pull away in the fourth, tack another touchdown on top, and that'll be all she wrote. 28-13, the finish.
Look, William & Mary is going to run the football and try to possess it and keep Furman off the field and try to win a game about like what Stone just described. I think Furman has found a little something on offense. I'm not going to take Furman to win the game, but I agree with LeBanowitz here, going to be a close one. Take number 14, William & Mary, at home over Furman, 21-20. The Citadel Bulldogs are at number 15, Mercer.
I like Mercer to win this game, Kev. I'm going to go 45-7.
Not me, sir. I'm a believer in what the Citadel Bulldogs have done so far this season. I think this is a new season, a new team, a new quarterback, and a new attitude for the Citadel Bulldogs. My upset special of the week. Take the Big Blue Machine on the road in Macon over number 15, Georgia. Dog 17, Mercer 14.
Ooh, okay. What was that? What nickname did you give him?
The Big Blue Machine. And I didn't give it to him.
The Big Blue Machine. And I think you did give it to him.
No, I didn't. My granddaddy gave him that name.
That kind of counts as you. Listen, nobody calls him the Big Blue Machine.
Yes, they do. Trust me, they do. They do. Trust me.
You can't do that, man.
Trust me.
Okay.
Trust me.
Okay.
They do.
Okay, so if Mercer wins this game by 30-plus points, you can never use the Big Blue Machine to me ever again. I don't want to hear it.
Okay, awesome. Bet. That brings us to the end of another episode of FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. FCS Nation is co-hosted by Mr. Stone LeBanowitz, produced by Mr. Sam Cittadini. I'm executive producer and host Kevin Marshall, thanking you for making FCS Nation a small part of your football week. And like I always do, y'all, I'd like to remind you that life's a lot like football. You play by the rules and the penalties won't kill you. Until next week, so long, everybody.